You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 11th of June, a night that will reverberate through the NBA for likely a decade. We'll talk about the Durant injury, the incredible Kawhi stretch, the Game 5 win, and then we'll look at six names for the Jazz on draft night. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making your offseason a little bit better. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai and Intercap Lending. So programming note, tomorrow will be day one of the Locked On NBA mock draft on Locked On NBA. So make sure you subscribe to that, follow it on whatever podcatcher you use. In addition to that, it may preclude me from getting Locked On Jazz out tomorrow. There's a chance I'll have an interview with Jeremy Wu. I haven't quite figured of Sports Illustrated on the draft. I haven't quite figured everything out, and I am on the road early Wednesday morning flying to L.A. for meetings. So we'll see what's up with that. All right, let's get to last night, the Durant injury, the ball game, and then six names for you to keep an eye on for the draft for the Utah Jazz. I was going to lead with the six names, but the Durant injury is so mammoth in its trickle down effect to the entire league. I think it'll impact the league for a decade. First, Durant was going to be the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. I don't think there's a doubt on that. I think if you project it, he was going to be the all-time leading scorer. He's probably the single most unguardable with Dirk and Jabbar's skyhook of all time. And now it's the Achilles tendon is just brutal. And guys don't come back from it right. It leads to a back injury. It leads to something else. And here is arguably the best single player in the game being struck with an injury that may take him away from us as a viewing public, as he is today, forever. That, to me, is really the story. I mean, there's so much more for it, but it's just terrible for the game. And it's this big, huge redwood tree, and that's the redwood tree that the core of this is that. Now, there's these branches that go forever off of it, to free agency, to the Warriors' future, to the series, to the doctor's decisions, to load management, to how we're going to deal with injuries in the future. It's endless. The impact that play had. The Bob Myers press conference was one of the most stunning things I've seen. He was clearly broken. Durant, they all know. Like, they know the truth. He's not going to be the same player when he comes back. No one has been. No one. Durant will still probably be terrific because he's currently the greatest offensive player to ever play. But that's not what he's coming back as. We saw the last of the greatest offensive player the game has maybe seen probably since Jabbar. Sad. And questions, all sorts of things of whether he should have been out there, why he was out there, how players are going to go about getting medical advice in the future. I mean, if I was a player, you want to be a part of a team, and yet I'm never letting a team doctor, who are good people and they're honest, but just for my own, this has nothing to do with their competency. This has to do with, I want to make sure that I'm the number one thing on their mind, not who else is paying them. Though doctors aren't going to make that mistake the way I'm implying, but it's still, that would be for my personal comfort. And then you get labeled as someone who goes outside the box. It's difficult. The free agency impact, which people are saying feels bad to talk about. I guess I'm not in that book. It's so abundantly obvious. He was the linchpin of free agency. Kawhi's probably going to do what Kawhi's going to do. But in fact, Sam Amick had talked about the idea of Kawhi and Durant in LA with the Clippers. Is it possible that that was set up and now Kawhi actually stays with the Raptors because he doesn't have the guy to go with him to the Clippers? Is it possible Kyrie and Durant was set up in New York and now Kyrie stays in Boston because he didn't have a guy in New York? Was it possible that Kyrie was set up in Brooklyn with Durant and now they're not going to Brooklyn? Or is Kyrie now going to Brooklyn because he's not going to New York? Or is Kawhi not? It's stunning. Does Kyrie stay? Does Kawhi stay? The entire free agency, frankly, feels to have less impact now. That all of a sudden, Durant might opt in, or at least he's not playing next year. Kemba stays in Charlotte for the Supermax. Does Klay stay in Golden State? Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant might change their route. And suddenly, of the top-tier free agents that we had, maybe Jimmy Butler's the only one to move to the Lakers in L.A. And the second-tier free agents are Chris Middleton. Tobias Harris probably deserves to be in that top group. Marc Gasol, Al Horford, depending on his contract, which is probably redone. And guess what? That doesn't have nearly the landscape-changing impact that seemingly Durant did if he were to leave. It just, and who knows? What we don't know is how many of these deals are pre-done. What we don't know is how often these guys have pre-orchestrated what it's going to take. Do they know it? You know, felt like Draymond and Durant were working on it the whole time. But then again, if that series changes, when Oklahoma City's up 3-1, Durant's not going to Oakland. And it feels like we're back in a similar circumstance here. It's really incredible. So is Kyrie now the linchpin to free agency that his move changes everything? Does Kawhi stay in Toronto have an impact on what Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving do because one of the best players in the league is staying east? Does Durant being out make the Warriors more vulnerable, depending on what Klay Thompson does, and changes the way teams in the Western Conference might go after it, knowing that the Warriors are not the superpower of the Western Conference next year because Durant doesn't play even if he resigns? It's endless. But the bottom line to all of it is we lost the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. We lost one of the greatest all-time players as he is today, likely to never be the same. That's the tragedy of what took place last night. We'll talk about the game, Kawhi's stretch, and give you six names for the Utah Jazz to look at as well. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. I am driving the brand new Hyundai Santa Fe. I'm actually kind of stunned by it more every day when I'm driving it. It's got every safety feature imaginable, and you don't really notice all how good some of them are. It keeps you in the lane. It makes the turn for you until, frankly, you make a mistake or you're not paying attention quite the way you should, or you don't turn your turning signal on. You try to change the lanes, and it moves you back. It's really stunning, the technology and safety that this Hyundai has. Hyundai, a leader in technology. I'm not sure that we always think about that when we think of the Hyundai brand, but it's true. They've got the feature in the back of the car where your kids open up the door in the back and it automatically vacuums shut if a car is coming to save your kids from making that mistake if they forget to look. These are the kind of things that separate Hyundai, and this is why you should look at Hyundai when when you're searching for a car. You'll find out that you get more for your dollar and you get a great ride and a great drive. The SUV lineup has got the little Kona. It's zippy. It's fast. It's fun. The Tucson has been redone. It's the mid-sized. And then I'm in the Santa Fe. And we recently purchased the Santa Fe with three sides. There's a new one coming out as well here very shortly that's a little bigger. You've also got the Elantra and the Sonata. They're great sedan lineup. Murdoch's have been in Utah for 90-plus years. And Blake and the crew down in Linden, also the crew in at Murray and also in Logan, are going to make sure you get a great experience. It's the no regrets buying experience. It's the signature to what Murdoch Hyundai does. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Let's go to the game last night. It was one of the great fourth quarters you'll ever see. Kawhi was just incredible. I mean, to the whole conversation of yesterday's rightful order of the basketball universe, he wasn't great all night, and then he carries the team for a two-minute stretch that was one of the best ever. He's averaging 31-10 in the playoffs. And they're up 103-97 with the ball, by the way. This is, I think, the thing. Everyone's talking about the timeout. Like, it's 103-97. They're up six with the ball. Now, the timeout was taken by Nick Nurse because he didn't want to lose it, and I think he overthought that. At 3:05 left, and that's why he took, because he didn't want to lose that timeout. I get he's done it all year. That's what the coaches do. They lose that timeout at the 2 minute mark. The other one I would tell you is if you score at 103-97, that game's virtually over. So you go up more than six, get to that three possession lead inside 3 minutes, it's pretty much over. And so there's an argument there that actually you call that timeout to make that play. Kawhi misses 11-footer. Curry rebounds, and then Thompson hits the three. And then Lowry misses a three when it's 103-100. And Curry misses again. And that's the goaltending play. And you think they're all right. And then they have, with 1:34 left, the Raptors commit that backcourt turnover that is just miserable. And then it's tied, and then Clay hits, and they're off and go. And they win at 106-105. I will say this. When that ball swung to Kyle Lowry, the idea that Kyle Lowry, for all the years of struggle and troubles, could have won the Raptors a championship was almost such a good story that you thought it was going to happen. If you see that play again, and you want to know what a great player is, watch what Draymond Green does. Draymond Green gets to the outside of Marc Gasol so he can close on Lowry. Gasol is doing everything he possibly can to pin Draymond Green inside. Now, ironically enough, had the Raptors recognized it, the play was probably down to Gasol, but too hard a pass to make at that point of the game. And Draymond Green gets to the outside of Gasol so he can close on Lowry, understanding where the rotations are. It's an remarkable defensive play at the key moment of a game, understanding exactly what you're supposed to do. It's pretty awesome. The Warriors' resiliency is obvious. We've talked about it. You know, it's the heart of the champion stuff. It's pretty amazing. The interesting little turnabouts in this series is Pascal Siakam, who has been so great, is now being left wide open from three and was 0 for 4. They're not worried about him at all. The other one is, you know, and I don't know how the Warriors get through this now, certain players are playable, right? We're seeing less and less of certain guys at times. Now, you finish that game thinking, oh my gosh, are the Warriors going to win this thing? On the other end, I would say this, and that is the Warriors had 20 threes and they had a good game from DeMarcus Cousins. Like, I don't know that that's necessarily something that we should actually anticipate the Warriors being able to do again. And I don't think there was something dramatically shifting in that game. If you look at quantified shot quality, the Warriors quantify, there hasn't been a huge change. We talked about that earlier. This is the quality of shots you're getting. Last night was the Warriors' second worst shot quality of the series. They just shot it the best they have in any game all series. The only game anyone shot better was the game on June 5th when Toronto shot better. So the Warriors shot lights out last night. And that's why they won by one while getting a good performance from DeMarcus Cousins while hitting 23s. As much as you have that emotional reaction of, oh my gosh, are the Warriors going to pull this off, which I even tweeted out, the analytics would tell you that the Warriors just had an unusual shooting night last night, whereas the Raptors were a little less good than usual, which could be caused by the Warriors and the pressure and everything else. But the Raptors, and the Raptors have been in three of the five games shot below their shot quality, and two of the games shot lights out. So at some point they'll just be average. They haven't done that yet. They've either been somewhat behind or way above. And last night was the Warriors were way above. The Warriors hadn't done that yet. The Warriors hadn't had a good shooting night in the series. You know they're going to do that. That was what last night was. It'll be great. I mean, it's just great, great basketball. That's for absolutely certain. All right, let's give you six draft names on the Utah Jazz. Locked On NBA mock draft starts tomorrow on Locked On NBA. That's Wednesday. Top picks. I am, as I've said, trying desperately to trade my pick. I have the following offers out. Tell me which ones you like, or I'll tell you what those offers are as we do the draft segment next. That's coming up as we continue. Today's show is brought to you by Intercap Lending. Steve Carter over at Intercap's my guy. He did our refinance, and Intercap was an amazing experience. And now the coolest thing is getting all of the reviews from Locked On Jazz listeners who've been going to Intercap and having the same experience, because Steve Carter is just nails, man. He's just great at what he does, and everybody who goes to him has the same experience, whether it's Clayton and Sarah Winslow, who said Steve Carter, Intercap Lending, did a fantastic job with a refi for Sarah and I. The process was seamless and very quick. We reached out in a time crunch. He really made it happen. Intercap Steve is by far the best mortgage company we've dealt with, and will recommend them to anyone. Dave Thurman said, all I can say is Steve Carter is by far the best loan officer I've ever worked with. That is saying something, because I've done my fair share of loans in my lifetime. He was a responsive, down-to-earth person to work with, which is rare. I will recommend him to anyone. I'm telling you the same, and I'm recommending Intercap because of Steve Carter. Tell him you're with Locked On Jazz. They'll give the Locked On Jazz listeners the corporate discount. Steve's number is 385-885-28. 385-885-28. It's not just that Intercap has Steve Carter. They also are a direct lender, which allows you to get difficult loans done, which allows you to get things streamlined. They actually still hold our loan right now. They service their own loans. It's a long-term relationship. They're rising and growing. And why? Because real estate agents go to them because they get jobs done. They've grown from 2 to 11 branches in the last year. Call Steve Carter at 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. I loved the app as well. I haven't talked about that in a while. Intercap has got a great app which streamlined the process for me, and as busy as I was able to get it done. So go visit Intercap Lending and call Steve Carter at 385-885-28. So I've got the 23rd pick, and frankly, I'm trying to trade it. I want shooting, and if I can get an extra year on a deal, and I can do it in a way that doesn't hurt our free agency situation right now, I'll do it. So I've talked to the Cleveland Cavaliers about Kevin Love. I would say this, they seem to be surprisingly interested in like multiple first round picks and things of that nature that don't seem to make any sense to me. I have talked to the New Orleans Pelicans about Etuan Moore. Etuan Moore has 8.8 on his contract for next 8.6 next year. He's 30 years old. I kind of like him. He's a six. He came out of Purdue. He's a 2-3. Can really shoot it. Would help our shooting a great deal. So I've talked to them. I've talked to Indiana about Doug McDermott, who doesn't really have a position. He's kind of a 3-4. But he can really shoot at 44% from three. Unfortunately, most of these deals involve Jay Crowder, whose contract expires, and then at the end of next year and isn't as good a shooter, but he's our heart and soul. We would lose a lot of toughness, but there's a level where you're transforming this team a little bit. There, Doug McDermott, his contract is at 7.33 and has another year on it. So I kind of like that one a little bit. Out of Creighton, interesting. Both these are Mark Bartlestein clients, who's the same agent that had Gordon Hayward. I don't know if that has an impact, but both those guys can really shoot it. Talking to Sacramento about Nima Bjelica, and trying to see if we can get there. Talking to Denver to see if they want to move a Hermann Gomez or want to move one of their guys because they just have too many players. Bjelica in Sacramento is kind of interesting because his next year of his contract is non-guaranteed. So it would give us the maintain flexibility, but while also having someone, he's also 31 years old, which makes him a little nerve-wracking, but he's $6.8 million. And so a trade with them, plus giving up the first-round pick, if you did that, would save about $3 million, I think, and give you about $3 million more worth of cap space if you need it. And then Bjelica is at $7.1 million the next year, non-guaranteed at 32, but it's a June 29th date on that. It'd be ironic to get Bjelica if you're letting Ricky Rubio go, because Bjelica rented Ricky Rubio's house in Minnesota after, and they were best friends after Ricky left. So we'll see how that. So anyway, those are some of the deals I'm looking at. Feel free to tell me what you think of any of them and what I should do in those deals. Here are six names for you, and we'll see whether or not they become available. That's part of it. So I don't think this first guy makes it to the Jazz. He's out of Virginia Tech. I kind of like him a little bit. I haven't watched a lot of him, but interesting. Nickeil Alexander Walker. Everything seems to have him top 20. Versatile guard, 6'5", with a decent wingspan, about 6'9". Could play multiple positions. He's not a great finisher. More likely a secondary playmaker. Kind of feels like he could work a little bit inside Quinn's system. And has a body similar to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who came out last year and is just 20, but he is 21 years old, despite the fact he's a sophomore. I don't think he gets to the Jazz. I don't think that's actually a possibility, but it's worth keeping an eye on. Sticking with the two-name concept, Talen Hooker-Tucker is an interesting name. He's a freshman at Iowa State. He's just 18 and a half years old, so this is a longer projection play. He averaged just 12 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 assists. He is 6'4", 235, so he's a beast. He's got a 7'1 wingspan and 8'7 standing reach, so this is your molding your piece of clay. This is us believing in our projections. You know, similar size to Grayson. Is that preventing you from taking another player? He's able to get shots at a very high level. He is not a good free throw shooter at 62.5%, so that's a little worrisome of whether or not he's ever going to be able to make those shots. He's young. His decision making's not great. None of his game, the little bit I've watched of him, is elite, or like his ball handling's not super. He's actually, I didn't find him to be an unbelievable athlete, but he's got a lot of talent. That's a long-term projection play, probably going to be on the board. Cam Johnson is the exact opposite. He is a 23-year-old who is just a pure shooter at 6'8", 205, was probably the best shooter available with Ty Jerome in the draft. That's another name I probably should be talking about. He is not a super off-screen shooter right now. He's a better spot-up shooter, and he's a better get-himself-open kind of guy. He was not a great player when he was younger, and so he's the kind of guy who, as he's gotten older, has been better. In 2018, he did have a surgery off his left hip that kind of may have derailed some of that development of who he is. It doesn't strike me from any of the numbers I have on him or other things that he's an elite level athlete, though his finishing in transition was pretty good. His isolation game is limited, but he is just a knockdown, dead-eye shooter who at 6'8", 205 with a 6'10 wingspan should be able to be an adequate defensive player. Kind of Jonas Jerebko-esque, actually. Kind of, as I think, a pretty interesting player. And I think a nice thing about him, you know, when you look at a Carson Edwards or something like that, you're wondering, like, can he evolve the way usually high usage players struggle when it's time for them to come into the NBA draft. And you're wondering whether or not Cameron Johnson should be pretty comfortable with that. He wasn't a huge possession user. And now flipping it over to the other side, a pretty good shooter who's super young, Keldon Johnson, is interesting. I watched the Kentucky games and thought he showed a lot of promise. He's 6'6", 216. He's got a 6'9 wingspan, the 8'8 standing reach. He's averaged 14.6 rebounds, 2 assists. He's a good shooter. Not anywhere near the level of Cameron Johnson, but pretty darn good shooter. His catch and shoot's not quite as good as some of his other stuff, but he also just wasn't used a lot. So you're wondering, he didn't run pick and rolls, he didn't set picks, and he didn't run isolation. He had a lot of transition opportunities where he was just okay. He was in the mix. He looked like he belonged. I do believe he's driving like a $200,000 car, according to TMZ, which you can decide whether that bothers you or not. The game didn't... He didn't have that incredible natural feel to the game. Some of his passing looked like he wasn't a step ahead. But, you know, he's 19 and a half, so he shot 38% from three. You're kind of wondering what he might be able to come. And then probably maybe the most interesting athlete of this group is the kid out of Stanford, KZ Akpala. He's 6'9 and a quarter. He's 210 pounds. He's got a 7.75 wingspan. He is not the most remarkable shooter, or his numbers spiked this year, and you have to decide whether you really believe them or not. The sample size is pretty small. He did get better from his first year to his second year. His ball handling improved. His passing improved. He got rid of a hitch that was in his shooting, but the sample size is so small. As I said, I think you're a little nervous on him. You know, he is 6'9", half 210, so it's a unique body, and you'd have to understand how he's going to be used. Does he become a Trevor Ariza defensive player? Kevin O'Connor in the Ringer, I think, compared him to Wesley Johnson, which I actually thought was not bad. And then I realized I didn't have any idea what Wesley Johnson was, which might sum up him a little bit, that you're just not sure exactly what he is. So those are, I'm not guaranteeing that that's where the Jazz pick. And then the sixth name, those are five names. So you have, and really, well, Alexander Walker, I feel like, just fits what we are, because he can play between those positions. He's kind of redundant to Grayson, but they could play together. I just don't think he'll be there. I do think the other four guys I've mentioned have a good chance to be there: Horton Tucker, Cam Johnson, Keldon Johnson, KZ Akpala. And then the last, Ty Jerome, I probably should be talking about. He's just a knockdown shooter. He's 22, so he's older. You're just going to believe in him that he can. He's a 40% shooter. And you're going to believe that he's just got enough elements to be able to play defensively. His athleticism is not great. I'm not sure yet on whether or not Grayson Allen can play because of his lack of lateral quickness, which to me would make this a very hard draft pick, because they're basically playing the exact same position. And one thing I really like, and you know, I like it about KZ Akpala when we talk about him, I like it about some of these other guys, is I want a player who, when I look at him, he could make the floor in multiple ways. So Carson Edwards is nice, but he's only making the floor as your point guard. So he'd have to beat out whoever your backup point guard is and be better. Kendall Johnson could probably make the floor as your two, get on the floor as your two or your three, and just get minutes. Talen Horton Tucker at 235 and 6'4". Maybe he can become P.J. Tucker over time. Like right now, he's just a guard, but he's got unusual athleticism for his body size. He might be able to make it in two, three, or four positions. Dort, the kid out of Arizona State, who's 6'4", 222, similar body, is probably one of the best athletes in the whole draft. Looks like a defensive end. He could probably play, get on the floor in multiple manners. Cameron Johnson at 6'8", 205 might be able to get on the floor in multiple different manners. I like that. When you draft Tony Bradley, he's got to beat out Epe Udo. He's got to beat out Derek Favors. He's got to beat out, you know, or to get those minutes. That makes it more difficult if there's only one path by which he can get on the floor. So I think that's, you know, at least an interesting one. Now, that leads us to a guy who just kind of keeps circling back. I liked the few times I've watched him. And that's who was in town just recently is Eric Paschall. Now, he's, you know, on Kevin O'Connor's board, he's 47th. So, like, in the mock draft, if I made the trade with Sacramento, I would go get their 40th pick and just go draft him with that pick. And I kind of feel like you can get the same player at 40 that you can at 23 in this draft. But he's interesting. He's 6'7". 254. I don't know. Can he get on the floor as both a 3 and a 4? I doubt it. I think he's probably just a pure 4. Can he play a small 5? That would be an interesting thing. He actually moves better laterally than a lot of the guys and should be able to switch. He knows how to play. Villanova's had guys have all come in the league and been ready to play. He's the ultimate player who a few years ago would not have been a draft prospect because he was a tweener, but now seems to have the ability to do things, defends well. His three-point shooting, everyone's calling him a good shooter. I'm a little nervous about 34.8 college percentage three-point shooting and whether that translates to the NBA. And if it doesn't, that's a pretty big gap for him. But you'd have to hopefully believe that he can do that. 75% free throw shooter last year. So those are six names, really probably five for you to think about as we get closer to the NBA draft. I'll try to figure out what we're doing with tomorrow's show. I'm not quite sure, but I do know the Locked On NBA mock draft will be up tomorrow and available for you. This has been Locked On NBA. Thanks to Intercap Lending as well as Murdoch Hyundai for sponsoring today's program. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for following the program. It is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.